All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 31 of Ride the Docs podcast. It's great to have you here, and we've got a full show today for you. So without further ado, let's introduce the regulars, and then we'll get into what's going on. So first of all, welcome to the show from the West Coast of the US, Tom Johnson. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm kind of weirded out by this virtual background, but I think I'll get used to it. So this is the latest I've ever joined here, and it's at 11 p.m. and I feel like a very old man here because I'm like half asleep, but hopefully I'll stay awake.
It's all right. Hopefully the conversation will wake you up again. Then the problem is you probably won't be able to go back to sleep again. And of course, joining us from sunny Berlin is Chris Ward. How are you?
It's not so sunny today. I'm good. I overslept, so I just woke up.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the
So
day.
I'm usually in Tom's position, and actually, I was on a call yesterday with someone who said, "Oh, I love the podcast you do with the Write the Docs people. You're always the right mix of tired and grumpy."
So it's actually
Like
a
me
feature.
personally.
I love it. Well, look, as I suggested before, we've got a bit of an interesting show today, and the topic of the show today is all about search. And Chris and Tom and I, we've been around the traps a while for as technical writers, but the ins and outs of search is something that a lot of technical writers have a bit of trouble getting their heads around often. So I thought I'd bring in someone who knows a little bit about search, and that is Peter Levin from Funnelback. How are you, Peter?
Hi everybody. No, it's good. End of a long week, but no, ready to get stuck in and hopefully provide some useful tips for you guys when you're developing your docs.
And search and all that sort of stuff. Well, look, first,
Yes.
what we normally do is when we have a guest on the show, we ask you to tell us a bit about yourself. So, how about you start off by saying, well, how we know each other? Because we sort of do know each other a bit, don't we?
Yes. Yeah. So Jared and I both are part of the documentation team at Squiz. I'm actually working for, I write the documentation for Funnelback, which is Squiz's search engine product. And I've been working at Squiz. I started in the UK in 2009, so I've been using Funnelback for a while. Jared and I write all of the documentation for Squiz's suite of products.
Along with Giles, who's also a friend of the show. We've had Giles on before
Yes.
talking about stuff as well. So it's a bit of a Squiz affair now. All three of us are on here now, so the trifecta is complete. So, Peter, the thing that I was talking to you about when I wanted to get you on the show is that I know that so many documentation websites just rely on search. Everyone sort of expects it as like a first-class citizen on websites now, but it's often a bit of a mystical thing, or when you start to dive into it more, it feels sometimes a little bit overwhelming to get search right and understand what the really important things of search are. So
Yeah.
what I wanted to talk about today with everyone on the panel today is a bit more go into a few details about the ins and outs of search and think about the things that are like almost like the things that you can't not think about when you're actually wanting to implement search. So
Sure.
I guess we should start at the beginning, which is, Google does search. Why can't we just use Google to index our doc sites and manage it all for us,
Well, you certainly can use Google for that if that's what you want to. Google obviously does a really good job of search, and that's why everybody uses it. But there are some limitations from using a search engine like Google. So Google have an offering called Google Custom, which allows you to use your content from within Google Search Index to deploy a search on your website. And that is, that search then just searches over the documents that form part of your set of pages. So maybe that would be your search domain usually. One of the big disadvantages of using a search engine like Google is that you just have no control over when and how frequently your content is updated. You're totally at Google's whim on that. It might be a day, it might be a month before your content appears in the Google index, and there's nothing at all that you can do to change that. The other large area, I guess, is that you've got a lot less control over what you can do with your search. So Google Custom gives you some very basic customization options. You can do things like add a header and footer to kind of try and sort of brand it to match your site. But beyond that, there's not a whole lot that you can do. So if you want to start using more advanced functionality within your search or making use of some of the things that we're going to talk about a bit later, it's just not really an option with a free service like Google. But having said that, using something like Google is definitely a much better thing to do than not having a search at all. Searchability and discoverability of content goes hand in hand with all of the sort of best practice stuff that we do on a day-to-day basis when it comes to actually writing the content. Having a bit of an understanding about how people interact with your documentation when they run a search does have some sort of, will have a bit of an impact on how you write your content as well, because you have to keep in mind that people can come in, from a search engine, people can come into your content from anywhere in your site. It doesn't matter how deep it is. So you've got to make that work and make that experience make sense. So for example, if you take a large document and break it into down into chapters and sections within those chapters, and you kind of design it in such a way that you're meant to read through it from start to finish and kind of follow this process through, what happens when you jump in at page 32 of that with no context around that? Are people going to sort of understand what's going on? So there's a lot of other things that you do need to think about when you're even just designing your sort of basic sort of content.
Right.
So I don't know if that...
Go ahead, Chris. That's a supplemental, Kestrel. I just wondered, because when I saw this question, there was a little bit of me that was thinking, is that even still an option? Because it used to be that the simple search was, you saw it everywhere, and now you hardly see it at all. And I was actually even quite surprised that it was even still an option. You do still see it, so occasionally. So do you think people sort of stopped using it because of some of the reasons you outlined, or just because there's better options now? Or, yeah.
Sorry, I don't quite understand the question. So, I mean, search
just,
is...
Just in the Google simple search, like site search that you could add to websites, you used to see it a lot more and now you see it a lot less. And I just, if there was another reason apart from some of the reasons you outlined, or just now you have other options, which we will cover.
Yeah, it's not really something that I wasn't particularly aware that there was less usage of services like
maybe
like
just the sites.
I wonder if it's got something to do with like a lot of sites, like you say, Chris. There's probably at one point, maybe early on in the web, when people were starting to think about, you know, embedding search on sites and stuff like that. You know, custom search was probably an easy option to do when there probably wasn't a lot of search tools out there that were affordable or free in a lot of cases. Or, you know, sort of easy enough to set up. And I think from what Peter tells me, it sort of seems relatively simple to set up a Google custom search. Whether that's a good thing or not is another thing to sort of think about. But, you know, it's still an interesting sort of idea as to why. I know that I think Ladbrokes, when I was working at Ladbrokes, they had on a certain part of their site, they had a custom search, a Google custom search embedded in there just to search on this. I think it was a terms and conditions page. So they just narrowed it down to this one thing. And it probably had a lot to do with the fact that the terms and conditions page was pretty hard to navigate. So you needed something in there, at least something that you could actually use to to sort of
I think we should probably explain to people who don't know what Ladbrokes is and why that might have been important.
it was a betting agency. It was their betting terms and conditions. It was a mammoth wall of text. So yeah, is an example of where something really simple like that, if you don't need search on any other part of your site except for that little bit, then maybe that's a time when Google custom might fit in.
I was just going to say, I think having search is something that we probably should all be kind of striving to have, because it's kind of one of those things that people just expect that you'll have. People are certainly the last few years have really shortened people's attention spans and everything, and they expect to find information sort of instantly with very little sort of, you know, putting a one word query in and I'm going to find exactly the page that I want in some enormous website. And, you know, search engines like Google, Funnelback, and, you know, all of these other search engines, they've had to become quite smart at how they deal with that sort of thing. So it's just kind of one of those services that we should be providing, especially given that it's not very hard to do.
Yeah, I guess there are a whole lot more options out there now. So if we think about the options outside of something as basic as Google, Google Custom, what do you start to get into when you're trying to work out what search engine to maybe pick for the job that you're trying to do? Because it seems like at the moment in the marketplace, there's plenty to choose from. And I think in a lot of places, that's often where people get a bit overwhelmed with going, well, what do I do? Where do I start? You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think actually starting, if you really don't know, starting with something like Google Custom is a great way to go, because it introduces you and gives you a basic level of searchability of your content. Mm. Going beyond that, there are some free search engines around that you can install. There's things like Elasticsearch. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. There are certainly a bunch of free tools that are out there. And then you obviously move up from that into starting to go into the paid for tools, Funnelback of which is one of those. It really kind of comes down to a number of things, I guess, one of which is how technically proficient are you and how much time do you want to invest in putting together a search? So something like Google Custom, you can deploy very quickly with relatively little skill. Most of the free search engines that are around, especially the more fully featured ones, require quite a lot of work to configure. So you do need quite a bit of technical expertise to actually get in and set these things up. But if you do have that and you've got the time to invest in that, you can come up with something that's pretty good. And what the paid for services tend to do is they tend to give you the ease of use plus the real control over your search. So, you know, whether that comes down to, you know, picking the different front end sort of search features you want to enable or configuring how frequently things get updated, all that sort of stuff. It does, the decision really does come down to, I guess, what you want to get from your search. The other thing to consider too is how large your site is. If you have a very, very small site, you're not going to get a huge amount of benefit from putting a search on top of it. It's just about really making that sort of evaluation.
What do you think on the subject of small site? I know sometimes it's hard to put a number on things, but If you're talking like pages, which I'd imagine is what a search engine's probably mostly focused on, as far as like what it thinks is a large or small site, what's sort of like a small site to you? What would you call that?
So I'd probably call a small site. It's a little bit of a tricky question because a small site could just be, you know, two pages, but those pages are really big. I mean, having said that, a search engine is not going to help you very much, because if you can only get two search results back, you're still going to have to find where within those pages the relevant bits of content are. I'd probably consider a small site anything up to, I don't know, 50, 100 pages, something like that.
Okay, so 50 to 100. You know, you've raised an interesting point there about site size and page size, because you were saying just before, when you're talking about quality results, it depends on how the content's chunked down a little bit too, and how many individual or unique pages an engine can find by the sound of things. Tom, do you have, you've got a fairly large site being, you know, your blog site. Have you got search on your site?
Yeah, actually, probably 3 years ago, somebody from Algolia was like, hey, we'll give you free Algolia search as long as in the search results we have this little Algolia image. I was like, fine. So I've kind of been playing around with it. And it's interesting, the algorithm that Algolia takes, they actually, you tell it which elements that you want to index. So it's not like you just feed it a bunch of pages to index. It actually like breaks up each element on the page and indexes that separately. Every paragraph element, for example, or however granular you want to get it. And that then makes it so that each element is like searched. I guess if you were to just search the whole page, it's like not nearly as efficient. Some people like this approach, other people don't like it. It's very weird because like you think, oh, let me just index everything. I'm going to index my code blocks. I'm going to index my block quotes, my list items, my heading, everything. And when you do that though, it often like creates these huge record sizes that then like give you errors and stuff. So it's tricky to try to adjust. But one thing about Algolia that I think is has a very strong appeal is the instant results. The ability to type and kind of see what's returning right in the same instant that you're typing feels very modern. Whereas other search engines where you have to like do the full query, hit enter, and then see what comes back, and then adjust your query. That's not nearly as like gratifying as the instant search.
Yeah, so instant search is obviously great, and most search engines actually employ a bit of a combination of the two. So, I mean, just looking at Google's public search, when you start typing a search, you'll start getting a set of suggestions being returned. Some search engines also allow you to kind of tailor a bit more what those suggestions look like. So, you know, you might, for example, if you're searching like a staff directory or something, actually get items coming back that show there's the staff member's photo and sort of these rich sort of snippets coming back in those sort of suggestions as well. And that sort of moves all the way to sort of full-blown sort of instant search. So what Algolia does is kind of gives you that auto completion, but in a fairly small little block in the corner of your screen. That's typically how I've seen it anyway, rather than actually updating the whole sort of page of search results. But both sorts of things are certainly possible. And you mean you can, sorry.
Oh no, sorry. Keep going.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's certainly possible to implement a sort of instant search with a lot of the sort of other search engine products that are around there. Your point that you mentioned about sort of chunking about this, you know, throwing everything into the search, that's actually a really good point. If you actually want to get really good quality from your search results, it's really important to kind of think about what is actually going to constitute a useful search result for your users. So you don't want to index everything, because otherwise you kind of get this situation of garbage in, garbage out. There's so much noise in the search results that you can't actually find the thing that you're looking for. And then when you actually sit down and take a much closer look at it, you find, well, actually, I don't need half these items in the search results because they don't actually provide any useful content. So for something like a documentation site or just like a typical sort of website, it's often a good idea to actually not index your landing pages, because they just duplicate the content. Actually, what people want to find are the content pages. Taking a blog, for example, you wouldn't want to index the main page of the blog. You want to index the individual articles, because whatever you search for on that site is going to return the homepage, because that lists everything. Or if you you know, take a typical sort of organizational website, you want to hide the headers and footers from the search engine if you can, because if somebody searches for contact, it's going to return every single page on the site because it happens to be in the site navigation. So there's these little things that you can do to make your user's life a lot better. And thinking a lot about what constitutes good content in to actually include in the index is probably the biggest thing that you can do to improve your search results.
Hey, Peter, I have a question for you. So this leads perfectly into this big sort of conundrum I ran into when I was investigating search a couple months ago. In our developer portal, there's documentation, there's a blog, there's forums, and then there are marketing pages. And currently we have like a search that searches across everything but the forums. It uses cloud search. It's not very exciting. And we've been looking for a replacement, and I was researching different tools and sort of came to the conclusion that if I wanted to have a really good search, I needed structured content in there. Like I needed to have specific sort of tags that I was using for different purposes. So my question was this: should I scope the search to just be docs, because that's the only part that I can actually control, and I can highly refine the metadata that I'm feeding it. I can kind of prune the results. I can fine tune it. On the other hand, the results won't include a lot of other content that might be relevant. But if I expand the scope and include all these other domains, the blog, the forums, the marketing pages, I can't control the metadata. I can't say, hey, you got to like tag them this way. It's going to be a lot of stuff like blog posts from, I don't know, 5 years ago that are no longer relevant that I'll have to try to like bury. Old forum threads that are just optimized for certain keywords but aren't actually relevant. Like, is it better to just have a really narrow scope on just docs? Or should I really try to have a site search that is comprehensive of the site?
That is a tricky question, and it does depend a lot on your users. I mean, a lot of search engines actually give you some tools to kind of give you the best of both worlds. So we were talking about Google Custom being a very basic search. As you start to move into some of the other search tools that are out there, you can do things like set up filters on the search results. So if you search something like eBay, for example, or Amazon.com, you'll find on the left-hand side, there's a whole bunch of options that you can click on to start filtering down the set of search results. So for a site like you were just talking about, you might have a filter, for example, there that says, I just want to restrict it. I don't want to see the forum posts. I'm going to untick that box. Or look, I'm just interested in the documentation items that are in there. And then you click the documentation button. Now, you do need some form of structured data to inform that, but the structured data might be something as simple as what is the domain name? So the domain name is a form of metadata, if you will. But I guess the level of functionality there is going to depend on the search tool that you're using, and whether or not you can sort of set up this kind of thing.
Yeah. The facets are something that I've always been intrigued by, like having a bunch of, you know, facets for documentation that would indicate like, hey, what product are you searching? What, version? I don't know, recency, popularity, but as you say, like you've got to have everybody on board with the same kind of facets, and they have to tag something. I mean, you could try to drive it from the URL, but that assumes your URL has that kind of information. And in my case, it doesn't really. So it's like, it's kind of a lost cause. And that's why I didn't even want to try to include those other domains in the search, because I knew that I couldn't do any filters with them.
Yeah, so for something like that, if you do have the ability to kind of set up basic faceting on the URLs, you could set up a top level one that just allows you to do that kind of restriction where you can knock out all of the forum posts and knock out all of the blog posts, and you could still then have facets that relate to the documentation part, because that's probably the more important bit anyway, so that when you actually start to drill down into the documentation, you can still have that sort of functionality across that just applies to the documentation. As to whether or not you include things like the marketing sections or the blog posts or those sorts of things, I mean, that really comes down to, I think, whether or not you think that that content is valuable for your customers, and whether the trade-off of including it in there is I guess a positive when you compare it to the you know, the increased difficulty in potentially in finding some of the other things. I mean, there's also a lot of other things in search engine ranking algorithms that can often sort of overcome some of those problems. So search engines, for example, will take into account the age of a page. There's a lot of actually things that come into the ranking algorithm that it uses to determine what is actually a good result. And some of those things that you can influence by how you write your content as well. Some search engines also allow you to go and sort of pull little levers and tweak those settings to say, you know, I want content from the doc site to be actually be seen as more important. So I want to push up those results relative to something from the marketing side. I want to push that right down. And that doesn't mean you're not going to see marketing results, because maybe the word that you search for is only in a marketing result, but it means that given everything else is the same, the docs one will rank higher than the marketing one. So it's kind of a complex problem, and I don't think there's necessarily a right answer for it. And it's going to obviously vary a lot from site to site. And I think it really comes down to the content at the end of the day.
Hey, speaking of the algorithms, I just wanted to throw something else in here. There's another search engine that actually AWS just released called Kendra. I had never heard of it, but it tries to incorporate machine learning algorithms to allow like users to sort of upvote or downvote different results that will then like inform the results that are shown in the future. And I don't know how well it works, to be honest. I think AWS implemented this on their site, replacing Cloud Search about 2 months ago. So it's still kind of early to see if it's had any impact. But the idea of incorporating machine learning into search seems like a natural fit. I don't know that much about machine learning, but I think like this is an area that is ripe to take advantage of it, because I don't want to be in the business of manually adjusting all the levers of search myself, right? Trying to figure out, well, let me figure out what the user's location is, and then I'm going to optimize this No, it's like, that's too much. Have you kind of explored any kind of search engines that have machine learning algorithms informing?
Yeah, so I guess the first thing is it really depends on what your definition of machine learning is. What you're talking about there is actually quite similar. No, what you're talking about there is quite similar to a feature that actually exists within Funnelpack, where users' clicks on results will over time influence the results. So an example of which, if you run a search for something, you get a set of results back. If the vast majority of users click on result number two, eventually that will become result number one. And so it is, I guess, a form of machine learning, but it's not machine learning in the way that a sort of regular machine learning algorithm would work.
Really upvoting, isn't it really? It's just humans upvoting results.
I don't know. I was wondering, as Tom was describing it, like a common thing you have with search is you don't really know what people want to find and how they look for it and things like that. So I guess there's elements there that could be useful of, you know, you discover that you call something one term, but people are actually looking for another term, and the algorithm learns to adjust to that. And maybe over time you just change your copy as well. But and then maybe where people go after that kind of thing, it actually starts to help you decide the journey that people follow that sometimes you don't know to begin with. That could be where it starts to help, but I'm not sure how
you looked at it. So typically when people talk about machine learning, they're talking more about things like neural networks, where the algorithms actually modify things quite dynamically. What I was talking about before is a very simple kind of mechanism, but it still can be quite effective. But for those things to work, you need to have decent volumes of queries coming into your site, because if you've got very, very low query volumes, number one, those kind of things are really easy to spam. Like it just takes somebody to click on a result three times and suddenly like they've influenced the results, and they don't want that to happen. So it is a bit of a balancing act there. Search engines often give you some other tools that you can use as well, which aren't really machine learning, but they have you as a human element in the system where you could, you know, look at things like the search usage analytics to see, well, what are people searching for that they can't find? And then you can review that fairly regularly and go, oh, they're searching for this word, which I don't have. I'm just going to put something in there to say that when somebody searches for this particular word, I'm going to map it to the word that I use. So mapping that sort of user language to what might be the technical term that gets used within the site. And that's another really, really good way of improving your search results. But in terms of machine learning, I think for the kind of search that we're talking about, probably there's not a huge level of benefit there. I mean, obviously search engines like Google use it all the time. They use so many factors, things like, you know, what's your location? And because it knows your location, I'm going to push up results that are kind of near to you and all this other kind of stuff. It's a sort of very, very sophisticated beast, but the only reason they can do that is because they've just got such huge amounts of data to base this learning off that you can actually learn something useful.
I suppose that's a bit different to like the scope of like a Google search, a public Google search. It's very different to, I guess, a site search, because a site search is just focusing on a very narrow subset of the internet, really, isn't it? So I guess the type of things that people will be searching on a doc site, for example, or even like a basic website, will be very different to what they would typically put into Google as a search result. They probably already know when they go into your doc site an idea of what they want to find. So they won't be doing a broad search. They'll probably like going, like in the case of, you know, the product I work on, Matrix, they'd probably want to search on something like, well, you know, I want some more information about assets and what they are and what they do. So they probably already have an idea of what they need. And a lot of that sort of broader search that Google's so great at refining down to really narrow results is already done for you because you're already in the context of a site.
That's certainly true. And I think it's more true of very technical sites like a documentation site, that people are much more likely to be looking for an answer to a fairly specific question when they do run a search, as opposed to the more sort of information discovery kind of queries that you'll get, where it's like, I don't really know what I'm looking for, but I just want to find out stuff on this topic. I think that's certainly a lot less.
Sorry for cutting you off there. I was thinking while you were saying that, I was thinking, is search a way of working around a bad information architecture on this website? Or do you really need to already have a pretty decent information architectural structure to your site for the search to work well?
So a search can work well with a poor information architecture, but it'll work better if you've got a good information architecture. So, I mean, probably the number one thing that you can do to get a good search is to just write your content well, you know, follow kind of the sort of best practice things that are out there, particularly some of the web best practices, like, you know, you don't use click here for links, for example, because actually those words you use when you define a hyperlink are actually really, really good indicators of what that target piece of content is. You know, if you've got a link, say Matrix asset listing or something like that, and that's the link text there, it's probably a very high probability that that page that you're going to go to is about those three words. So search engines, if they've happened to find, so those are actually seen by search engine a bit like a vote for that page, especially if they come from an external site.
Right. So the quality of your XREF text is actually more important than you might think for how web crawler or a search engine crawls your site. I guess
because it's effective.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, it's effectively another type of metadata about the page that you're going to, in a similar way to the text that you use for the title or the heading one for your page. Again, it's seen as quite an important thing to describe in a very succinct way what that page is about. If you happen to find a match in that particular part of the page, then that page is going to get pushed up because of that.
It's just quality. Go ahead, Chris.
No, a question I had there that is something that has always intrigued me, I think maybe most with relation to search, is, which I think you were starting to get to there, was the aspect of handing from how people often arrive at your site, which is through an external search engine, to then your own search. Is that something you've ever looked at as well? So, you know, you can finesse the experience once someone is on the documentation site, but how they get there in the first place is somewhat harder to control, although there are ways.
Yeah.
And then transitioning between the two.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the principles are the same. I mean, if you write a site that you can search well locally, it's also going to benefit your public presence as well. So you know, sticking to those kind of principles is always going to, you know, have a better outcome. I mean, obviously, when it comes to, you know, once they're in the site, as you say, you've got control over that. That's where things like the metadata and so on that you tag your pages with really starts to come to play. Because frankly, there's very little point in adding metadata to your page if you're just using a public search engine. Most search engines just ignore it. I mean, I believe Google has got some kind of heuristics in place to try and make an assessment. Is the metadata that exists on this page actually relevant to the content of the page? Because obviously people used to really abuse metadata early on. You know, there were a lot of very dodgy sites out there that were just, you know, they'd buy a domain, which was quite a normal domain, and then they'd have all these hidden metadata with just random keywords so that their page would come up in the search results of Google. So that pretty much shut down metadata as being a useful thing. But within your own site... Within your own site, you could really, you can actually add a lot of value by having good quality metadata in there, because you know you can make your search results have really nice summaries on them, or really enhance the search results with, you know, particular information. Maybe, you know, presenting some of the tags or showing an icon when it's of this particular type or whatever, or using it for your faceted navigation. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that you can. A lot of value you can get from metadata, but just don't put metadata in there for the sake of putting it in there, because it's not going to do anything really.
You had a question, Tom?
I've got a question.
Yeah.
I want to make this as concrete and actionable as possible for everybody. Has anybody ever looked at search analytics and taken some kind of concrete action based on those analytics? You know, we talk very abstractly a lot about strategies, but I just want to hear stories like, oh, hey, we looked at our analytics. We found that people were searching for X. So this is the action we took. Or, yeah, go ahead.
So I did give you that example before, just in an abstract sense about, you know, looking at your analytics and you find, for example, that, a lot of people are searching for this word, but I'm actually using a different word on my site. You can then take an action. You can go, I'm going to put something in place. So in Funnelback, there's a feature called a synonym where you can map one word to another word, for example, or expand the query into a certain set of words. So for example, many years ago, I was working for a small government organization. One of the things they happened to do was research into homicides was one of the things that this organization did. And they actually ran a program of like capturing all the national statistics on that particular topic. Now, it was pretty important work in terms of the work that this organization did. And we found when we looked at the analytics that a lot of people were actually searching for murder and not getting any results. So we actually punched that into the search, and lo and behold, we got 4 search results back, and it's like, whoa, we've got a lot more content on that. But but the thing was that we didn't use the word murder. Murder is one of those sort of popularist terms that, you know, the media use all the time. But there's a lot of technical terms like homicide and femicide and so on that are actually the technical terms for that. So we just put a simple synonym in place that said, if somebody searches for the word murder, actually search for murder or homicide or manslaughter or whatever else. And immediately, suddenly you're starting to get search results back for this topic. That's one example. Another example is that, you might go into your search analytics and see, a lot of people are searching for, I don't know, electric vehicles. You go and punch that in, or you even just look at the term and go, actually, we don't have any content on electric vehicles on our site. So then you can go, should I be adding it? Or if you're in the case of like a government organization, say you're the country's environment department, and somebody's searching for that on your site, and you just don't, it's not part of your government department's remit to have that content on the site. So, but users don't know any different, you know, oh, environment, electric cars, same thing. So maybe it's the transport department's job for that. So what you can do in that case is either go, well, I'm going to add some content on this so that people find something useful. Or again, Funnelback's got this feature where you can kind of do a featured result. And I believe other search engines have similar sorts of things. So what we did there, and in the context of a government site, you don't have this situation where you necessarily want to keep people trapped on your website. Your goal as a government department is to help people find the information that they need to find out. So what we did is we put this thing, which is like a featured result on the site, so that when people search for electric car, it would say, hey, this is where you can go to find information on electric cars. It's on the Department of Transport's website or whatever. So people, yeah, they don't stay on your site, but at least they're not leaving your site being really annoyed at you because they couldn't find what the information they thought that you had. So yeah, that's a couple of examples of how you can sort of, you know, use your web analytics to kind of improve things. Actually, there's a blog post that I wrote a few years ago about this particular topic that sort of goes through some of these examples that I've just given.
Thanks. And just looking, that'd be great.
Yeah, we'll link that in the show notes for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, it goes through a few sort of fairly basic tips. It is slanted a little bit towards the Funnelback product because that's what it was written for, but the gist of the advice, you know, kind of applies to anything really. And it's kind of things like, you know, look for queries in there that you think, oh yeah, we don't have that content that's direct people to where it is, or things like, oh, people are actually always searching for this word and they're always misspelling it. Well, actually, rather than returning a spelling suggestion that says, oh, did you mean to search for, you know, organization with an S in it, or, you know, or government with like without an N in it because they're not great spellers, you can just go, well, if somebody searches for government without an N in it, I'm just going to search for government anyway. And then they get the results that they want because it's totally unambiguous what it is they're searching for.
So far, I think I've heard a couple of takeaways that we've sort of been talking about. It seems that
I'm making very big notes here. As always, I'm starting with a new project where I get to redo everything. And
search is a good place to start at the bottom. Yeah, for sure. So it sounds like when you're building out your meta, because you said, Peter, that the importance of metadata can't be understated in your search. But I imagine there's a bit of a process to actually working out where to start with actually setting up a metadata strategy for search. I wonder if we could maybe think about some basic steps that people could take when they're, like, say in Chris's case, where he's just at the ground level of his docs and he goes, well, I know that search is important. I know I want to put search on the site, but how am I going to tell my search engine the things I want it to know about? How will I know? How can I tell it what to crawl, when to crawl? And it doesn't need to be, I mean, this is a pretty complex topic as we talked about offline.
Okay.
Maybe breaking it down to like, how would you go about just doing a basic level of metadata that would really help bring really nice quality results back in a search?
Yeah. Okay. So there's kind of two things we're talking about here. One of them is about sort of in-page metadata, which you can use to enhance your search results. But for that, you need to make sure you have a tool that supports those sorts of things. So, you know, if you want to present faceted navigation based off metadata, you need a search tool that will be able to do that. The other side of what Jared just brought up was some of the other things that you can do to tell web crawlers about your website. So maybe I'll quickly talk about that first.
That's probably a good starting point. Yeah, let's start there.
That's something that anybody with a website can do. So there's a few things that web technologies actually provide to you as a web an owner of a website. One of them is your robots.txt file. So if you don't know what a robots.txt file is, it's basically a special text file that sits on your web server that a web robot, like a web crawler, like the Google bot or whatever, goes and visits, and they can find out some information about your site. You can tell these web crawlers, or tell specific web crawlers, I don't want you to crawl these bits of my site, for example. Now your robots.txt operates on the whole of your website. So you can say, I'm happy for you guys to crawl my site, but I don't want you to crawl, I don't know, my private section. They might have a folder called /private or something.
Or maybe calendars, for example.
So a web crawler that sees that, and most web crawlers are well-behaved, will go, okay, I'll follow these rules. I'll index the site, but I'm going to, if I find a URL with calendar in it, I'm just going to ignore it. So it doesn't end up in the index. So at a very high level, you can already start to exclude some stuff from the site. Now, the one thing to keep in mind, though, is that a web crawler is a bit like somebody opening up a web page and then clicking on all the links. So if you tell a web crawler to ignore a page and don't follow that link, if you then need to go to that next page to get to another page, it's not going to find it. So for example, if you want to, you don't want to index your website's homepage, but you want to index pages within the site, just as an example, but you couldn't put that into your robots.txt because the web robot would say, oh, it says don't index the homepage. I'm just going to go away now. I'm not going to click on any of the links. So to get over that, there's a special metadata tag called the robots metadata tag, which you can put at a page level and tell crawlers what to do. And these robots metadata tags, you can basically give combinations of index this page, don't index this page, follow links in this page, don't follow links in this page. There are a few other things as well, but those are the ones that are really of interest to us here from search point of view. So if you say something like, put this meta tag in that says no index follow, a web crawler will come in and go, oh, I'm not supposed to index the content on this page, but I'm still going to click on all of the links and then I'll go to that next page. And you can have a robots metadata entry in there as well that might say, oh, index all of the content on this page, but don't follow any of the links because maybe it's the landing page of a calendar or something. And calendars are really bad for search engines because they often go infinitely in both directions. So if you can imagine somebody clicking, you know, it's called a crawler trap. And most web crawlers have something in their algorithm to identify one, but you know, you might crawl 10,000 pages from the calendar before you trigger that switch. So it's always good practice to prevent that sort of stuff.
So you've got robots. That's the page. You've got robots and robots metadata. They're the two things you can do right now on your site to help Google and all the search providers out there to understand your site better. And that's free. You can do it now.
It's free. It's just part of the web standards. If you're interested in the robot stuff, look up the robots.txt information. You can actually do it from a link level as well. And you can also do it by sending HTTP headers. So there's various options to give you the same kind of effect. The other thing that you can do in terms of web technologies is to use a sitemap file as well. And sitemap files allow you to tell web crawlers, hey, I've got all these pages, maybe they're not even linked to, but I want you to index them. And you can also specify some things like, I want you to crawl this page ideally this often. So this content only changes, you know, don't crawl this more than once a week. It's not going to guarantee that they're going to crawl you more frequently, but it'll tell them to not sort of hit your site so frequently, or you don't need to check back very often because it doesn't change.
Oh, that's some really good tips.
Yeah.
It's worth noting for anyone thinking this might sound like a lot of work, that most tools, open source and proprietary static site generators and all these other things usually do this by default or have a very easy to configure plugin that will do it for you. So
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, exactly. I've got a question, Peter. So I've noticed that Google has started to sort of select parts of a page that try to answer the question I was asking, and then they present that selection as like micro content in the results. How do I tell Google that my page is a documentation page, and so that it will, I don't know, increase its rank in among the many other different types of pages on Google? Like I want Google to know that it's specifically a documentation page that's help content.
Yeah, so that's a good point. So there are a bunch of other web standards that exist out there that can tell things like Google things about a page. You've got a number of standards like the microdata standard, for example, where you can say this thing in a page this bit of the page constitutes an entity of something. This entity might be, this might be about a person or whatever. This is how it starts to get those sort of rich snippets happening. And, you know, sometimes a page might include multiple sorts of entities within them. So that's a standard called microdata. Then there's a few different variants of that. So there's another standard variant of that called RDF, which again is all about sort of tagging up specific things. It's all hidden stuff within the page generally. So it's a little bit like in-page metadata. And actually some of it is in-page metadata. So, for example, you know, when you share a page on Facebook, some pages that you share will come up with a nice rich snippet when you share them. Now that's because there's a certain set of metadata tags that tell Facebook, this is what the link of my page is. This is what the, what you should display as the thumbnail image. These are the, and this is what you should display as the description, for example. And those are the open graph metadata tags. So, there is some metadata that is totally worth putting into your pages if you think that it's going to help. You know, if you think your pages are going to be shared, for example, that's a great thing that you can do as well. But support for this kind of stuff is very sort of variable from product to product. So probably starting with things like those sort of open graph tags or the Twitter tags, and these are specific metadata tags, is a good place to start.
I wonder if the quality of your procedural titles also helps in that as well. Like, I imagine in a procedures title, you, if you were, say, wanting to search for how do I configure my labels in Gmail, you would expect that if a procedure that comes up in a Google search had a lot of those matching keywords in the title, that would presumably rank it up higher in the search results as well. And it sounds like that content quality that you were talking about earlier, about paying attention to how you write and how you structure, might also play a role in this as well.
It wouldn't surprise me if that's the case. I mean, there's a lot of cues and things that search engines do take from a page. And of course, Google and some of the large search engines, they've also got the machine learning in there as well. And when you start to extrapolate this across vast amounts of content, you can start to see patterns. So these how-tos and so on, you can kind of go, oh, it says how-to, therefore I think I'm going to tag it as an FAQ, for example.
Right.
But these are the kinds of things you do need vast amounts of data to be able to effectively sort of automatically tag, if that's how you want to think about it.
It sounds like you're best not to bank the farm essentially on doing, putting certain keywords in your documents just to try and affect the search engine. It comes down to just write well and write for your audience and make it, you know, make the content meaningful.
I think if that's the one takeaway message that you have, write your content well and succinctly, and follow all of the best practice rules, and your that will immediately help your site rank well, and avoid things like JavaScript as well. So one common problem that we see is if you've got a very heavily JavaScript driven site, and for example, if it's like an Angular type site that's a bit like a web app, you'll find that most web crawlers will not be able to index them because they don't know how to run the JavaScript. So that's another thing to avoid when you're looking at sort of technologies.
Is that still true? I sort of felt like maybe that must have been solved.
It hasn't really been solved. Google do have a queue for pages that it identifies as being JavaScript driven, and it will try to crawl them. But it crawls them at a much lower frequency, and sometimes it just gives up or can't deal with it because effectively, you know, the model becomes very broken down, and you simulating clicks on things becomes very, very difficult.
I'm a big fan of using tabbed output. Now I'm wondering if if I should
Tabbed output isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, if you look at the HTML underlies it, is actually just like first tab, second tab.
True. But check the HTML.
It sounds like it's more affected by like progressive web apps and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The
hash links.
And instantly scrolling.
It becomes so popular. I just assumed that maybe Google has started figuring it out, but
It does a little bit, but it's certainly not not widespread.
They're even promoted by other departments within Google itself. So.
It is interesting. I wonder if focusing on stuff like accessibility helps with searching and the ability for things to, you know, discover content on your site like web crawlers.
Mm.
I think definitely.
Actually, you know me, I like automated stuff. I came across, I have to remind myself what it was called, but there's a great automating tool for checking this stuff. I think I always forget how to pronounce the way it is, but the PA11Y, I think is the one I came across that does a lot of automated checking for you. Right. And I'm looking to convert that to some kind of... text editor extension at some point, but it's quite useful.
Yeah. No, look, anything that you can do that makes the site easier for people to use is going to help a search engine as well. So yeah, totally accessibility stuff. I mean, you could even go down to the level, for example, of making use of things like acronym tags in HTML to expand out your acronyms. Like that stuff all helps people. And it means that, I mean, the search engine will see that when it's indexing the page. So
I'd imagine things like heading levels are pretty important in sites as well, like having those correctly nested and not sort of like heading one to heading four and, you know, that sort of stuff. You know, it would help a crawler traverse a page.
I think, yeah, certainly all of that stuff helps as well. I know for certainly heading ones get ranked quite highly. As you start to drop down the levels, it's probably less of an effect. Mm. And that would totally vary from search engine to search engine.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, I can't believe it, but we're actually already at our allotted time. This has been an incredibly interesting chat with you today, Peter. I just wanted to invite Tom or Chris. If you've got any last questions for... Chris, go ahead if you've got some.
No, I'll let Tom go first. I do, but all right. I'll let Tom go first.
Tom.
And I'm just like 10 ounces away from... complete sleep, so I'm out of questions. I'm not even coherent anymore.
This is how I feel. Sorry, the call becomes a little bit hypnotic after a certain point. I start just kind of like, yeah, that's how I usually feel.
How about you, Chris?
I wanted to ask, we've mentioned one predominantly, as I've mostly worked on open source projects fed out of static site generators, I've usually in the past used Luna, which has its positives and negatives. But apart from things like Luna, Google, Algolia, are there any other good options for docs that we haven't covered in terms of tooling that we should maybe mention?
That's a good question. I'm a little bit out of the scene on all of the actual available free things that are around these days. Certainly, I know there are a lot of people that use tools like Elastic, Elasticsearch to do things, or Elasticsearch with... it's on the tip of my tongue. Not really. I'm not actually sure. It's one of those things that I guess it's a matter of really researching what's out there and seeing what they can do. I'm sorry, I can't be more helpful.
No, it's
than
fine.
That.
I hadn't actually. It's bizarre. I used to use Elasticsearch and the precursor to it. I can't remember what it's called. It's an Apache project. And they do take a lot of configuration. Luna is very easy, but some of the stuff you mentioned about returning incorrect and not useful terms is something I've definitely hit with it at certain points. It depends how a static site generator has implemented it. So be a little wary of it. It's quick and easy and free, but it's not necessarily going to get you the best results out of the box. So.
I guess it comes down to you'll get something out of it though. So if it's easy to switch on your site, then absolutely go for it and throw it in and see. Like it could be the starting point of, you know, further investigations for you. So, you know, switch the configuration flag on and let it do its thing and see what it does for you, right?
Yeah. What's the worst that can happen?
Exactly. You'll return something. Yeah. It's good. All right. Well, I think we might wrap it up there for this session, episode 31 of Write the Docs podcast. So thanks again for coming on and having a chat with us about all things search. Peter, it's been great having you today.
Oh, you're welcome. I just hope everyone finds at least something to take away.
Oh, I'm sure we will. Yeah, it should be interesting to see the comments we get from this one, because I think search is one of those things that people have so many questions about, but they don't know what those questions are until they know what they don't know. So yeah, thanks again for coming on. It's been great. So for people who listen to the show regularly, you'll know this already. But for if this is your first time listening to Write the Docs podcast, you'll know that you won't know that you can actually find all of the episodes for past episodes for the people like Peter who have come on at podcast.writethedocs.org. That'll get you into the Write the Docs website, and we'll jump links to it. If you like what you heard on the show, if you've got any other follow-up questions, do jump on to the Write the Docs Slack into the podcast channel and get in touch with us, because we'd love to hear when people have actually got some value out of the show. So jump on in or leave a comment on YouTube or your local, your favorite podcasting app, whatever you like to use to listen to the show. It'd be great to get your feedback. I guess until we meet again, it's... I have to say it, it's docs or it didn't happen. Have a great time, everyone, until we meet again.